All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and screwing you over. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico in an undisclosed location. I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the run for Governor of Texas. And I'm required by law to tell you that listening to this show will increase your chances by 140% of the police shooting your dog. Tonight's guest, the world-famous Pot Brothers at Law, Craig and Mark Wasserman, will be telling us how to survive the war on drugs, even though cannabis has been legalized for medicinal and recreational uses in many states. But before we get started, of course, I want to ask for your support. Head on over to taxationistheft.info. That's our new site. And that's got the podcast. That's got all of our awesome swag. Get yourself a hat. Get yourself a t-shirt. One of these awesome lapel pins. Flags. Piss off your HOA, wave those things in front of your house. And everything that you do goes to support our efforts to eliminate taxes around the world. And now, on to the show. Guys, welcome. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Our pleasure.
Our pleasure. Awesome. Good to be here.
Yeah, so I got to give you guys total credit for having a very, that was a pretty ballsy ad that went viral. Not too many people are willing to do that. So one thing I want to ask, I want to start this off, because I know there's a lot of crappy lawyers out there, and a lot of them get a bad rap, or every lawyer gets a bad rap because of the crappy lawyers. But you hire these guys, you ask them to defend you, and the first thing they do is take your money and say, well, you should just plead guilty on this one. That's not you guys, is it?
No.
Hell no.
That what you just described is what we call the classic bleed 'em and plead 'em, where the attorney will cut your wallet open, take your money, and then insist that you take that first deal and plead out real quick. So one court appearance, quick money, and they don't give a shit about you.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. They're almost as bad as the public defenders. They just cost a little bit more, right?
Yeah. No, it happens. And it happened to us. The very first time my son got felonies years ago for growing, we figured, it's like a doctor not operating on their own family. We figured we'd get a lawyer to do this. My son and I went and met a lawyer. Believe it or not, it was a brother team. And we told him that there was no deals. My son literally said he was ready to go to jail. We were going to fight this. It was bullshit. The cop didn't have consent and blah, 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 blah. And we're going to fight it all the way. And so that was what we agreed on. So the very first court appearance, my son's in the courtroom and the attorney tells him, wait here, I'm going to go talk to the district attorney. And he walks outside in the hallway to talk to the district attorney. Little does he know, he never met my brother. My brother's sitting there right next to them. And the attorney we hired said to the DA, hey, don't worry, I'll get this guy to take a felony and 90 days. So he went in and told my son that was the best he could get. And he's the one who told DA that. And little did he know, my brother was sitting there. So we marched to his office. Their faces went white when my brother showed up and said, oh, hello. Remember seeing me in court today? You did what? So we ended up getting our money back and fought ourselves and ended up beating the case on behalf of my son. And that helped catapult us into where we are today.
Nice. That's a great story.
And we're attorneys telling another attorney this, and he still decided to try to fuck my son.
Yeah. Were you guys already working on pot cases at that? Like, what kind of law were you in at that time?
Well, back then it was my brother had been already doing criminal law since 1996. Which included a lot of cannabis patients, because back then there was only patient rights, no adult use. So we'd already been doing that already. I've been doing transaction law, civil defense, things of that nature. So we'd already been doing that type of law, but not quote unquote cannabis law, because back then it was a lot different than today, the cannabis laws out here. So, but that kind of catapulted us into the cannabis culture in dealing with my son and all the people that he knew from the culture, from the ground up. So that's kind of how we segued into more of a cannabis practice.
Awesome. How's that working out now that it's legal for adult recreational use? Like, but there's still issues, right? I mean, it's not like you can just, you know, go around smoking a joint and like nobody gets arrested and cited or anything anymore.
Yeah, it's not legal. So like we like to point out that legalization is the wrong term to be using. And unfortunately, the media, it's all out there that it's legal, which it's partially legal, right? You, like here in California and in other states, they have their, you know, you can have up to an ounce, some states 2 ounce, whatever it is, there's limits. And once you go over those limits, you're looking at, depending on what state you're in, you're looking at potential misdemeanors and felonies. So particularly people who come to California, they come here, and we've represented countless people who get into this unfortunate situation because they think it's legal, which is they come here from wherever they're visiting. They go to a couple different legal storefronts, make their purchases, and maybe they went to 3 or 4 different ones and they got maybe 2 ounces altogether or something like that. And they're 21 and older, and they're, oh, hey, I went into a legal shop. I bought it. I'm going to throw it in my backpack here and get back on the plane and go home. Now they're calling us because they got busted for felony transporting out of the airport. Whether you have one joint or 1 pound or 20 pounds, it's a felony to travel and export out of the airport with any cannabis at all. So those are some of the problems with people thinking that it's legal when right. There are parameters and, you know, just partial legalization to some degree.
I would think that would be obvious, but because I'm a paranoid person myself of the police. But I mean, especially if you're flying it back into another state where it's not legal and you know it's not legal because that's your home state, I think that would be kind of obvious. But yeah, I know how people like to take.
I mean, even going from a legal state to a legal state, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter. Once you're in the airport, it's federal. A lot of times, though, they'll hand you back over to the state police, where in California, it's still a felony to export out of the state. They were supposed to have minimized all the marijuana crimes to misdemeanors. They got rid of all the felonies except transporting out of state and dealing to a minor. Those are still felonies in the state of California. Anything else supposed to be just misdemeanors, but some DAs have attempted to get around that by charging people with conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor. Guess what that is? That's a felony. So it's their end run. It's their end run around the people's will of getting rid of all felonies except the two that I mentioned. It's just, it's ridiculous.
That's a great way to escalate a misdemeanor to a felony.
Yep. Crazy.
So that's just, conspiracy is just, you're working with somebody else.
It's not very difficult to show when someone's got a storefront or they're traveling with it or whatnot. It's not that difficult to charge.
That's nuts. So, it's interesting because, so I'm always talking about taxes and how the government's ripping us off through taxes. And one of those is, I know you guys are in California. I feel terrible for you. That's why I left. one of the reasons, but you've got licensing fees, and I see you guys help set up businesses with like shops, dispensaries, that sort of things. What are you looking at as far as like what's it cost to set a shop up?
You know, we're probably the only attorneys when someone comes in and wants to set up a legal cannabis business and I'm usually the one taking those in, I'm trying to scare you out of doing it. Because I'm going to tell, instead of, because a lot of people want to come in and get started. I mean, I could sign people up left and right and get started, go down the path, and then they realize how expensive it is and how the profit margins are maybe like bare, you can never be, they're ridiculous with the how low the profit margins are, because not only do you have the regulatory compliance, the license application fees at the city and state level, you have your annual license fees at your at your city and state levels. And then not only that, then you have the reason we have such a bad illicit market. You're going to love this. I couldn't wait to get to it because of, you know, the taxes theft. There can be, depending on the city you're in and what they charge, at the end of the day to the consumer up the supply chain, you're sitting down, upwards of a 48% effective tax that gets pushed off to the consumer. Because you have a cultivation tax on flower and shake, that gets pushed up the chain. You've got to, when the distributor picks it up, he pays 15% excise tax. When the retailer sells it to the consumer, there's another 15% excise tax on top of the state and city sales tax and use tax. And then you have the annual license fees at the state level, which could range anywhere from, because it's usually on a sliding scale of what you are going to guess your income's going to be, your gross income. Let's remember, all taxes right now in California, city, state, it's all based on your gross. So if you have $0 to $500,000, could be $2,500. You know, a couple million on up to upwards of $150,000 annual license fee. And that is payable prior to you opening your doors based on your guesstimate of gross sales, because you're familiar with the with code section 280E of the IRS, of the Internal Revenue Code, where an illegal business at the federal level cannot take normal business deductions. So you're getting, but they want you to file your taxes. We can fault Al Capone for this. This is the Al Capone law, because he got caught hiding income. He got income tax evasion, but they couldn't go after the true number, because you could still deduct, even though, you know, it's illegal, you can make your deductions. And I mean, so you're looking at, you know, anywhere from, I'd say the cheapest, best case scenario for maybe a delivery service, which is run out of like a 600 square foot office, quarter mil up to 1, 2, 3, 4 million, depending on if you're going for a retail storefront, you're going for distribution, manufacturing, volatile manufacturing, or non-volatile manufacturing. I mean, it could just, you know, and they've got such onerous regulations, what you need to go through, rather than any other business that requires that type of oversight, is left up to the planning or the, you know, the building department. You need people to come out and inspect. We're going to have volatile material out here. Why do we have to go through 10 extra steps? Because we're a cannabis business. So I don't know if that, in a nutshell, it's just messed up. There's, you know, and cities are actually starting to back off. Cities were charging upwards of 6% of your gross. 6% of your gross as a developmental fee, because they didn't have taxes in place. Cities can only charge a tax if the people of the city vote on it on an initiative. Otherwise, they can't tax something, so they do what's called a development agreement. In the development agreement, the cannabis business has to pay upwards of 6% of their gross on top of everything else I just said. Now, there are a bunch of cities going from 6 to 1%. They're realizing that it's not sustainable. And people who jumped in early, you can probably get a good deal now if you want to buy into an existing business, because people didn't, it wasn't the green rush. The green rush was before taxation and regulations. That was a green rush.
So when they first opened it up, were there a lot fewer taxes? Sorry, there was like some dictionary thing. You're allowed to say a lot less now.
No. It's been the same. They even increased cultivation tax because of the cost of whatever fucking index they were tied to in a time where there was a couple state senators who wanted to put a freeze on the cultivation tax for 3 years and drop the excise tax from 15 to 11%, knowing how bad the industry is getting hit. And in California, we have the most extensive illicit market in the country. And the illicit market is crushing it. People are going there because they'd rather buy a $25 eighth rather than a $60 to $80 eighth from a regulated store. It's just, it fits right in with your theme. It's highway robbery. The cities and states it's really what I call, it really should, it's a sin tax. They're charging a sin tax as opposed to, this is like any other agricultural commodity and it should be treated as such, my right. opinion.
And it's interesting because like with alcohol or tobacco, it's not really that easy to grow your own or make your own on the scale that it is so easy with cannabis. Usually like you see the government put these types of things in place, and usually what they're doing is they're racketeering, they're protecting their own monopoly. Is there
big interest?
Yeah. Is there like who's running the big shops in California? Is there some of this stuff going on? Are they insiders, or is California really just like, you know, they don't have their monopoly association. They're just trying to get as much out of this as they can.
Well, I think when they passed 64, one of the arguments was it was for big business. Because your mom and pops that we represented for 20 years, you know, could be anybody, start a garden, and if we've set you up with the correct paperwork, you could be protected from the law. And now when those mom and pops come in before for 10, 20, 30 grand, we can get them set up. And that included our fees for a year as general counsel and everything else they needed. Now when they come in, it's like, depending on the city, you have $250,000. Do you have $1 million?
Wow!
Like, don't kill the messenger. So it really hurt the people who had been in it all these years, and now people got to get in bed with these corporations. But we're seeing corporations, it's kind of funny, lose their ass. And I've had a couple deals recently where I've had clients buy something for $4 million that was built for $9 million. But they're realizing that they didn't know the business. They were good with the corporate stuff and they had the money, but not the know-how. So it's funny that you bring that up though. There's what we have called MSOs, multi-state operators. They have big companies, they go into all these legal states and they snatch shit up and they have multiple state operations. You know where they're staying away? From the state of Oklahoma. They're staying away from the state of Oklahoma because in Oklahoma, and we've had clients that came here, wanted to try to get a set up in something. Hey, it could take a year, year and a half if you're lucky. And so what do? They go back to Oklahoma, open up over fucking night. Literally, a couple storefronts, a cultivation, a manufacturer. I think 30 days, they're up and running. Easy entry, the fees aren't high. And they're up and running. And so it was actually an article that I'd read that the multi-state operators are staying away from Oklahoma because there's so much competition from the little guy, because they're not precluded from getting into the business. Out here in California, probably Colorado, Michigan, Florida, other states that are gone legal, medical or adult use, the entry point is so high that there's not the same competition like as in Oklahoma, where if you wanted today to go open one up, you probably have the money in your bank to do it right now. That wouldn't kill you.
Right.
So that kind of answers the question of who's coming in, to the industry.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because, I mean, that's where, you know, a lot of people get this outrage at the way the system is. You get a lot of people screaming that they hate capitalism and corporations and all this other stuff. And it's like, you look at that comparison, that difference, And it's like, yeah, if you were living in Oklahoma and you wanted to start your little business, you'd be able to. Whereas in these other states, because of these high fees, it's that's why these big corporations are going to be making their money. But as you said, the profit margins are ridiculously low because there's the market, the laws of the market still take effect, and they've got to compete with the illicit dealers, which is interesting because isn't there still what would qualify as an illegal drug operation at this point? I guess over a certain limit, right? Because you can grow your own for your own personal use.
Go ahead.
So if you are
there is no gray line anymore.
Right. It's you're either in the black market or you're not. You either have a license from the state and a city permit to retail sell, whether storefront or delivery, to cultivate, to distribute, to test, to manufacture. You got to have licenses for all those activities. If you don't, and you are doing any of those activities, you're in the black market and illegal.
Or if you're growing more than 6 plants, if you're adult use.
Correct.
Wow.
And, you know, it's good to point out, you know, being that we are attorneys in California, and specifically with California law and Prop 215 medical patients, cannabis patients' rights, a lot of people in California are under the mistaken belief that Prop 215 went away and cannabis patients no longer had the same rights that they always had since 1996, which is not true. So if you're a cannabis patient with a physician's recommendation, you can grow what you medically need. There is no number. And so what happens is, let's say you're growing 100 plants, and we'll get back to the 99 plant wreck in a minute, but let's say you need to grow 100 plants and because of all the different ailments and sicknesses you might have and the different reasons you need cannabis. So if that person gets busted, he has a recommendation, he gets busted, to mount the defense, we're going to need all of his medical records to show all the different injuries, illnesses, whatever it is he has. Doctor who wrote the recommendation is going to have to give a declaration as to why he needs the cannabis over other medications. And then you get a cannabis expert to come in to break down exactly how those 100 plants get broken down. So if you know anything about cultivation, you know if you grow 100 plants, the yield at the end of the day is not going to be a whole lot. And you may need to use flower, break that down into teas and rubs and tinctures and oils and all that stuff. That's how you use the medical defense that it's all for me. Now, if there's any evidence of sales or anything going on outside of personal use, the whole thing is destroyed and you're busted. And as I mentioned a minute ago, the 99 plant wreck ripoff, which unfortunately, when Prop 215 was passed in 1996 and says what you need is an oral or written recommendation from a doctor, you can just have a doctor say it. And then at the end of the day, if you go to the court, doctor's going to have to come in and testify. And that's all Prop 215 said. There was nothing in there that if you get that recommendation that it ever expires. It never expires, except for the doctors who put a one-year limit on it so they can have you come back to pay them more money to renew it. That's where the expiration date was created. Then you had other doctors who got greedier and said, well, here, you can grow 99 plants, just pay me another $100. Well, here, you can grow 250 plants, just pay me another $200. And a lot of people were getting those recommendations.
Well, no, I think but the 99 plant wreck really comes from, because that was a big thing, and it's still, people still do it. They shouldn't, because it's worthless, but it came from the theory that at the federal level, DEA, and it's probably true, didn't want to dick around with any type of activity that was less than 100 plants. If it was less than 100 plants, we don't want to deal with it. State deal with, someone else deal with it. We want the big guys. So that's where that 99 plant actually came from. Another form of a tax on a cannabis patient.
Interesting. And so there's this other concept that I hear you use the word recommendation instead of a prescription. And this had to do with the whole, because it's still federally illegal. And I guess that's under, I guess, AMA's rules or whoever that is to regulate the doctors to give prescriptions. So this is interesting because this is like even like the, everyone complains about, you know, Trump doing loopholes to get around his paying his taxes and everything. But this is a loophole that one state is doing to get around the federal government's laws. Like it's a loophole with theirs by saying, oh yeah, it's not a prescription. It's a recommendation.
Correct. Correct. Right. Because a doctor can't prescribe it, but he can recommend it.
So that's, yeah, that's just.
So that's why hilarious. Everybody wants to say, and it, cause it's not really even a dispensary because they're not dispensing medication. I mean, now that we have the retail store, it's actually called a retail storefront. As opposed to the good old days, it was going to the dispensary. Everybody used that term.
And it's illegal to dispense drugs.
So
semantics.
They're going to be able to, they should be able to prescribe it soon. You would think they and big pharma
we're still waiting on the feds for that one.
Yep. Yep. Hopefully we'll sooner than later.
We'll see. yeah, I mean, it's they've had an excuse for the longest time, and you know, a lot of the advocates are always running around saying, "Oh yeah, it's so great! It cures all these diseases and all these." Oh, cure is another word you're not supposed to use. But like, it's great for all these things, and I'm sitting here like, yeah, that's wonderful that it does all these things, but at the same time, it's like, even if it didn't, what right does the government have to tell you what you can or can't put in your own body?
100% agree, man. You're preaching to the choir.
There's actually, I don't know if, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you're preaching to the choir. We say that all the time.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's.
Not to mention, I mean, it's great. You know, you're right. Aside from all those anecdotal cases, which there's millions of them, we've talked to, I don't want to, maybe thousands, hundreds of people who have been saved by cannabis. But putting all that aside, you're right. What the fuck? Leave it to individuals to decide what they want to do, especially with a plant that you put a seed in the ground and it grows like a fucking weed. That's why it's weed. It grows places without even being planted. I mean, it's not man-made. So yeah, I'll get on my soapbox if we, you know, I keep going.
Yeah, by all means, go ahead. So what's interesting is down here in Mexico, their Supreme Court actually ruled, and I still have no idea where this is going. Because it was about a year ago, a year and a half ago, 2 years, I don't know. They ruled that a ban on cannabis possession alone was unconstitutional.
I remember that.
And then later they said the same thing about cocaine. But there's still no dispensaries or anything down here. So it's interesting. And I'm not sure where that's going. I think at one point I heard that there was like the courts gave the legislators 6 months to come up with a way to regulate it instead of banning it. And they never did. So there's like nothing there yet, but I'm wondering like, so which I mean, seems like that means, okay, it's absolutely legal and just nobody's had the balls to set up a store yet. But I'm wondering like based on what we just talked about with, you know, what right does the government have? Has anyone tried to take this to the Supreme Court and say the federal government doesn't have the right to regulate this, or is it too expensive and nobody sees the interest in that? Because as soon as you win, it's like you don't get to open up the business because everyone else is doing it. So there's no money to be made.
Big Brother, is that the Marvin Washington lawsuit?
There's two of them right now. I don't think that's the Marvin Washington one. There's another one. A group of scientists are suing the DEA over how they approve cannabis applications because you can. you can file an application with the DEA to grow cannabis for the government. And I guess the DEA takes these applications and sticks them up there, you know what, and doesn't act on them. I mean, literally years go by. And the DEA and the scientists are suing them, saying this is ridiculous. This is their own way of prohibiting it still, and it's not right. And so the court is potentially going to make the DEA move on these applications. But the other one is our good friend of ours, Marvin Washington, ex-NFL player, championship player with, was it Detroit? Who was he with? I'm bad about things like that.
But a
really great guy, Marvin Washington. A little girl, I think a vet, three or four people are suing the feds to say, like, what right do you have? And these are kids that are refugees of their own state, because in order to cure their epilepsy or whatever the problem was, they would be felons in their state. So be a felon or treat my kid, because nothing else on earth has worked. They move them to Colorado. They move them to California. Any state that's legal, they have to move there, get the medicine. The kids recover. And I mean, those are the stories. That why should I have to be a refugee from my state because it's illegal to treat my kid how I see fit?
Right.
And that one's moving along.
Nice.
I don't expect much out of either. It especially depends how far it goes up. And it depends on the Supreme Court, and God knows what that mix is going to be.
Yeah, there was in Texas, there's a place for the 49ers. No. Yeah. And a couple other teams. There's this girl, Alexis, when I first got involved in politics in Texas, and that was her story. This was probably 5 or 6 years ago, and she ended up moving to Colorado. I hear all these stories all the time. Because I look at any of these like legal decisions and I'm like, okay, these should be completely logical decisions. It shouldn't have anything to do with emotion or anything. But at the same time, if you get a lot of people really riled up about something and they're out there protesting and doing whatever, things start to change. But for some reason, out of I don't know how many hundreds of millions of pot smokers we have in this country, they don't really get out and fight for this as much as you might think they would, or as much as they do for some of these other things that are, I think, less important.
Hey, we on our IG, I'm constantly telling people to get off your ass, register, and goddamn vote. I've said that, what you just said, so many times. If all the weed smokers voted for either an initiative or voted for the politician, city council member who supports their position, you could change everything overnight, because there's enough people who smoke weed, they just don't admit it. And they need to get out there and they need to exercise their right to vote, because that's the only way it's going to change. I don't know about all these riots and protests and shit like that. You know, I mean, it's great. People have that right. But does it actually change shit at the end of the day? You've got to get the people into the office in order to change shit. The people in there now aren't changing anything. That's how I see it.
Got to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. To the part about the protests, I think that used to be, I think, much better. Much better directed. Like when you look historically at some of the protests, it would be people would get angry and they'd go protest the people that did them wrong. And now it's like people are just burning down their own cities and it makes absolutely no sense. If you're mad at the police, go outside of the police station and protest, or go outside of the legislators' offices and protest there. Go to the people that are actually doing you wrong. I think that's where that actually makes a difference. But you're absolutely right. The voting is a huge part of that too.
Get out and vote. That's all there is to it. Get out and vote.
What's your guys' Instagram? Let's give that a shout out.
That's pot_brothers_at_law.
Gotcha. Go over there and check that out. I think I'm already following that one.
Yeah, we have a Pop Brothers at Law with no underscore, but that's a backup account.
In case they shut you down.
Not, believe
We've
it
been,
or not.
We were shut down twice.
Oh, wow.
And then fought and said, shut the fuck up and put us back on. And they did.
But they nice. Did. They turned us back. It wasn't easy. My brother did it. Took, I don't know how long, and like 80 emails and texts and DMs a day.
That's
insane.
He was
relentless. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the if you can imagine, in my circle, we've got quite a few people that are always being banned from Facebook.
Yep.
They got it in for us. But yeah, it's these guys are nuts. My account was I went in one day to run some ads, and they said your account's been suspended. So I sent the, and they're like, would you like to appeal it? So I sent them an appeal message, and they responded back and said, oh, it looks like that was an accident. We're going to reactivate it. Okay. So the next day I go in to start some ads up again. Same thing. It says your account's been suspended. Click here to appeal. So I go to appeal it. Oh yeah, that was an accident. It wasn't supposed to happen. Again. The next day I go in, it says your account has been permanently suspended and there's no appeal button anymore.
Wow. And there's no one to get a hold of.
Nope.
No. It's absolutely insane. But it's like, yeah, they just hold a monopoly on that stuff.
Terms of service.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, well, let's move to another platform. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But at the same time, I'm trying to get this message out to hundreds of millions of people, and they're not on that other platform yet.
Correct.
So that's
no, that's messed up. I mean, you know, I know they have the terms of service that you click and sign, and I'm sure in there it says they can do whatever the fuck they want to do.
Right.
I just wonder what, you know, potential lawsuit would be, you know, you cut me off of because of this rule, but there's five other people that are breaking the rule that you haven't cut them off. So if you're right. going to apply this rule, you got to apply it fairly, and you're not. You're applying it in a discriminating manner.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing. So I've paid them to run ads over the years. Not a whole lot, maybe like $5,000. And what I was purchasing for that was the ability to have a history of all the customers who viewed my ads and all that sort of thing. And to be able to use that in the future for more efficient ads. And they've taken that away from me. So there could be something around that. And to the same thing, they would say, well, yeah, if you have any violation of any of our terms, but at the same time, they're admitting by saying that was a mistake that there was no violation. So I don't know. But then, you know, who wants to spend, you know, $1 million fighting Facebook
right.
to win $5,000 back?
But, that's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah. One day I'll get someone who walks in the office and says, hey, I don't care how much it costs. Let's do it.
Yeah. Right.
And if you're listening and you have Bill Gates money and you want to
do
this. Yeah.
It's going to be I wouldn't say a complete waste of time, because we tell people that all the time. People want to come in and they want to sue somebody so fucking bad. And I know a lot of attorneys that would probably take the case. But I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure? Litigation is not a fun thing. Litigation is tough. It's hard. It's expensive and it's time consuming. You really want to do it? To what? To maybe win? If anybody tells you they're going to win, they're liars. Any attorney says, I guarantee you we're going to win, and you have to go before a jury, they're lying, because there's no way on earth you could ever guess that. You can't. And then at the end of the conversation, like, you're like, okay, that'll be, you know, 50 grand retainer if you want to go forward.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think I want to do that. And I talk them out of it more than going forward with it, because at the end of the day, what are they going to get? What are their damages? It's not worth the time, effort. So try to help people not be stubborn.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome, and I want to thank you guys for being like that, because that's in a world full of lawyers that are happy to take your money. I mean, that's such a big problem, because this is something, you know, all these problems that come up that we all face throughout our lives, dealing with, you know, getting ripped off, getting charged, getting ripped off by the government with criminal charges. And like to have some actual sensible guidance, like that's not based on, oh yeah, just give me your money and I'll do whatever you want. I think that's really good to see. And I know there aren't a whole lot of lawyers out there. So I want to thank you guys personally for doing that. That's huge.
Appreciate it.
So, I'm just reading some of these comments that are coming in. Someone's talking about public. What about creating public social media that falls under the same laws and restrictions as the last office? So it's supposed to be, say, post office. I'd rather there be no government since we have a government. No, but since we have a government, we should create a social media that's under the same laws as the post office. I guess if you want the government delivering your emails, but they're already snooping through everything else. So,
well, you know, I mean, the thing is, see, this is where I, you know, you start to get a little older, you get a little bit more conservative than maybe I used to be, you know, make your own app up, you know?
Yeah.
Don't use the app. I mean, it's cold and it sounds heartless and I disagree with a lot of what IG does, but after the end of the day, when you read those terms, I've actually gone in and read them when we got shut down, and it's like, it is what it is,
right?
You know? And,
it's interesting. Like it's our own fault for dealing with that. I mean, you know, like there are plenty of other platforms out there. But it's our, you know, well, I don't want to lose all my connections to all my 5,000 friends who I've never even met, really, let's be honest.
Right.
But I don't want to lose that by moving to another platform. And that's one of the things that holds a lot of people back. I think there's, you know, and then you also have there's the mainstream who doesn't even care about that shit. They don't even care that the government's reading all their emails and everything. They're just like, whatever. I'm not doing anything wrong.
That's what everybody says until they get caught.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the average American commits 3 felonies a day. So, which is great. There was actually there was a lawyer who did a great or really, you know, in line with your shut the fuck up. There was this this guy, I think he was an ex-prosecutor. He was giving a talk at a law school. And he just went on like this 1 hour spiel about why, like, here's a million examples why you should not talk to the police. And, you know, everything from like, yeah, you're not a suspect until the end of the conversation where you said you were in the neighborhood or you heard something or, you know, or you didn't hear anything that was like from your neighbor's house and you were too close. Well, you should have heard it. So why didn't you hear it? Maybe you're lying. So now you're a suspect. All this crazy stuff, or like, you know, you're fishing and then it's like you don't know that like the size limit is 5 inches on the fish, so now you're a felon. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, there's nothing can come good of you discussing anything with the law enforcement. It's very simple. It's very simple. The only reason an officer is talking to you is because they don't have enough to arrest you. Okay, period. They don't want to know you. They don't care. They're not your friend. They are talking to you because they're going, shit, how can I get in the car and how can I get this guy to rat on himself? Let's start a conversation. That's why right. The whole script with I'm not discussing my day, no matter what they say, they could say anything in the world, doesn't matter. I'm not discussing my day. And that's polite. Right. And you're shutting them down because they're going to ask you, where are you coming from? What are you doing? Why are you over here? What do you have in the car? What are the buds? Is it going to be easier this way? If you roll, you're going to be one of those guys. I'm discussing my day.
Play that game?
Yeah. You want to play that game? I mean, they'll get your face scream and yell at you. Some let you go. Look at our page. My brother just posted a DM we got from somebody in Washington where they used a script and they actually got let go with not even a ticket.
After 45,
he did get out of the car. He complied like we tell people. He said, well, if I'm getting out of the car, then I'm being detained and I'm invoking the Fifth. They had three other squad cars come up, I guess, and they all tried asking him questions, and he stayed quiet. He shut the fuck up. And eventually they had nothing to hold him on, so they let him go. They didn't search the car because they didn't have any reason. The only reason they're going to search your car is because you're going to give them the reason. So shut the fuck up.
Right. Unless you got a French fry in your back seat.
And have nothing in plain sight. Nothing in plain sight.
And you notice the police are actually really good at that. Like whenever they do something wrong, they, you know, excessive force, shoot somebody, whether it was justified or not, it doesn't matter. They shut the fuck up. They don't, for weeks, they won't say anything about it. They won't respond to the press. They won't respond to the people. I mean, even like I've seen an angry mob around a cop just dragging some guy into the police station. They're arresting him. And this angry mob is like, what are you arresting him for? What are you arresting him for? What are you arresting him for? And the cops just don't say anything.
I mean, the first line of our script is, why did you pull me over? Because that starts the clock on how long they have to issue you a ticket. They can't just hold you there forever unless they develop some other independent probable cause. And they get that by talking. They extend the time to be there by talking. That's why the whole, I'm not discussing my day. That's it. And if they don't want to tell you, because I saw somewhere where the cop didn't want to tell him why he pulled him over, but he wanted him to get out of the car anyways. And the guy's like, well, you have to tell me why you pulled me over. True. So in court, with all the video and audio, you let us use that as your defense because you didn't say shit. He did things wrong. So, but this cop was like, no, you need to get out of the car. No, you didn't tell me why you pulled me over or why you're arresting or why whatever. I think the cop dragged his ass out of the car. I mean, he was, as opposed to, and while it may be wrong, sticking to the script, complying, cooperating with what they ask you to do, not talk to you. People confuse cooperation and put your hands behind your back, get out of the car, do this, get in the car, whatever. That's cooperation. Not talking to them. They might try to insinuate that not talking to them is cooperation, and that's not what, no. That's not non-cooperating. It's asserting your rights respectfully, peacefully, and preserving your rights for down the road. That's really what it's for. It's not a right. It's not a panacea that you're not going to get arrested or you're not going to get taken in or you're not going to get fucked with. But if you do get fucked with in charge, if you do what we say, it's your defense that you're going to help us help you.
Right.
So and that's really the end result.
I know there's like some people who will say, yeah, but even if you comply and do whatever they say, there's still no guarantee that you're going to make it out of there alive. But I would think to those cases, it's like, yeah, but if you resist, if you try to fight them on anything, that's really only going to increase your chances.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, we get that a lot, but we've never heard of a story. And we tell people, if that officer, the rotten apples, which we know there are, is going to beat your ass, he's going to beat your ass, whether you say our little script politely or not. And with all the video and always filming the police these days, it's going to be far flung that they're going to be able to use the excuse that you kind of alluded to, which is, I was afraid for my life. That gives them an open ticket to anything. So if you stick to what we say, comply, they're going to be hard pressed to ever be able to use that defense. It just won't be there. It just factually won't be there. As opposed to someone going, yeah, you don't grab me. You can't do that. I mean, then all of a sudden, and there's people who don't do anything and still get taken down. There's the whole gamut. And you're either going to run into that bad cop, unfortunately, or you're not. We hear from officers all over the country who respect that we are not cop haters. We might be bad cop haters, but certainly not law enforcement haters. And this keeps them safe. If you stay calm, do your thing, you'll probably just get a ticket and move on.
We get a lot of support from cops all over the country, that, like my brother was saying, that appreciate understand what we're doing because it keeps them safe. A particular captain out of Kentucky has his whole night crew before they go walk their beats and go out there, stand up and recite the script and make sure that all of his cops know these are their constitutional rights. And these are what we would call constitutional cops who understand your constitutional rights. And they're out there not to violate those, but to actually be peacekeepers. You know, so that's, you know, and there's a lot of cops out there like that. And, you know, like we said in the beginning, we don't like bad cops. We don't like racist cops. We don't like those cops who are doing all this shit that has created a culture and atmosphere such that we need people like us to create this script and tell you to shut the fuck up. And this is what we have to train everybody else out there for while the cops are in the academy and getting out and training, because it's not training for keeping everybody safe. It's us against them. They're training against, you know, it's like militarized.
How many arrests can I make? There was something in the paper today about that, about cops lying on their reports, not checking in evidence. Oh, I didn't think that was lying. Like, really? I mean, and we've been arguing that shit for me. The crap that's going on with law enforcement today is not new to us. We've been doing this for 20-something years, and it's not new to us. It's just now we have always filmed the police. We have everybody and their brother and mother and sister and father has a cell phone. And we're seeing it now as opposed to it's happening more. No, because we've seen this, like I said, a long time. So now that it's being shown, hopefully they can be, you know, brought into check.
Yes.
That's another Absolutely. Form of taxation, right? That's another form of taxation. Is getting penalized by the state, by the police for crimes that shouldn't even be crimes potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all revenue. There's correct. I like to use this statistic when I talk about taxes, because everyone's, you know, well, I only pay, you know, 30% or whatever, or it's less because I don't make so much money. So I like to throw these statistics out there. The entire American payroll is $8.5 trillion. Every year, the government takes from us $7.5 trillion, which is so it works out to 88%. It's even more fucked up when you realize there's only $3.5 trillion of printed money in circulation. Of course, since COVID, they've printed a lot. So that's not entirely accurate anymore. But to the point about
keep printing it?
Yeah, that's the deal. They have this debt. I mean, if you think about it, it's amazing. Every year what they do is they take all of the money in circulation out of circulation twice over, and then they pump it back in. And that's how the money circulates. It's insane. But that gives them complete control over it. But to that point, that $7.5 trillion, what they take, that includes everything. That's your income taxes, your sales taxes, property taxes. That's your driver's license fees, your didn't turn without a blinker citations, paying for rehab because you were walking down the street with a joint. I don't know if they ever get probably like some probation terms or something. This stuff is all included in there, and it makes a smaller percentage of what they bring in, but it's all about money. And it's almost like every single politician is up there like, oh man, well, I don't get to spend the money that comes in from the income tax, but if we create a new tax over here or a new program over here, we criminalize something so that we can make money off of that, then I get to use that money for my program that I want.
Right.
And so
that's why I can never be a politician.
Yeah.
I can never
I hate
be a
that
politician.
People call me that.
I'm a political scientist from UCLA. My dad wanted me to be a senator, and I'm like, there's no hell, no way in hell. Because I can't bend like that at the end of the day to get what I want, give you what you want, even though I think it's horrible. Just give it to you. Now I just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Now I just fight for whoever hires me. They're right.
Awesome. Well, I want to give you guys an opportunity to plug any. I've got your website, and I'll have your Instagram linked on the bottom of the video. But if you want to plug any websites or any cool projects you're working on, anything you want people to know about?
Sure. So the website's popbrothersatlaw.com. And as we mentioned earlier, on Instagram, popbrothersatlaw with all the underscores in between. We're on all social media platforms, Pop Brothers at Law on YouTube, on Facebook, on TikTok. It's the WAS420. And we're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, pretty much everywhere on social media. And you should be sure to catch our podcast, Cannabis Talk 101, which you can catch on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every day, Monday through Friday. And you should also be checking out our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/popbrothersatlaw. We go live streaming there. In fact, we put on the podcast ends and the interview ends of these different interviews that we do. So we're always streaming over there as well. And you can call us at 855-WASS-LAW, WASSLAW. Now, we handle matters all over California, but if you have a matter outside of California in another state and even in some countries, we can potentially refer you to an attorney in those different areas, as we have a wide-ranging network that we've created through our social media reach. And there you go.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining me on the show. This has been really, really awesome. Hopefully very informative for anyone listening in. And I don't endorse too many lawyers, but these guys sound pretty awesome, given some of their humanity that they have above just trying to make a buck. So I think that's really awesome. That definitely earns my respect. I want to thank you guys again for listening to the show. Head on over to taxationstheft.info and support the show by buying all of our really awesome swag. You can also head over to my campaign page, danforfreedom.com. We're going to be starting the campaign here, ramping up for the 2022 election, starting just after the November election. So head over there to stay up to date. And of course, make sure to like and follow and subscribe and share and do all that fun stuff. This is on Facebook and YouTube. But it's also available wherever your favorite podcasts are. Thanks again, guys. Taxation is Theft. I'll see you next time.
Peace out.